You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The narrator of Tarun J. Tejpal's novel, The Story of My Assassins, is an investigative journalist who writes for a struggling Indian news magazine. When the story opens, this protagonist, whom Mr. Tejpal never identifies by name, has just learned that he was the target of an assassination plot and that the police have arrested five men who'd been on their way to kill him. Like his narrator, Tarun Tejpal is a journalist and the editor of Tehelka, a New Delhi-based newsweekly known for its aggressive investigative reporting. His novel is published by Melville House, and I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hello. And you share something else in common with your narrator. Weren't you also the target of an assassination attempt?
Well, I mean, there are a few seed incidents in the book that are completely true to life. I mean, much of the book is imagined and built around my own experiences in my life. But a few seed experiences are truly, absolutely accurate. One of them being the opening of the book. And if you read it, you know how it starts with the narrator hearing that he's been killed. And actually, something very similar happened to me one Sunday morning in the May of 2001. I had just gone into office to send out some emails. It was 10 in the morning, and the phone rang, and I picked the phone, and this friend of mine from Mumbai was calling. And he said to me, you're alive. There was a question mark at the end of the sentence. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, turn on the television set. And I turned on the television set, and there was a ticker running. Murder attempt on Tarun Tejpal's life foiled. In the next one, I got scores of phone calls from across the country, most of them very similar. You're alive.
The police had not told you that there was this plot against you?
No, well, you know, I mean, what had happened was a week earlier, the doorbell had rung early in the morning, and I'd opened the door, and there was a policeman standing outside, and I asked him what he wanted. He said, I'm here to guard you. So I gave him a chair, and he sat down outside the door, and he had this 9mm revolver tucked into his crotch. And every time I stepped out of the house, he would follow me around. And 2 days before this particular Sunday incident, the doorbell had again rung in the morning, and there was a sub-inspector outside the door, and I said, yes, what can I do for you? And he said, we think you need to be guarded by more men. So he had sent another three men to guard me. But nobody had actually come and told me why it was taking place. I had assumed that all this was happening in response to the huge national noise that was going on about a big expose that we had done against the government.
Well, that may have been related to it. Your narrator doesn't know why these men wanted to kill him. Were you able to find out anything? Hasn't the attempt on your life thought to be connected to a story that your magazine Tehelka had published that revealed corruption in the Indian government's defense department, which led to the resignation of the defense minister?
Well, that's what had happened. In March of the same year of 2001, we had done this, what is called the Watergate of India, this huge expose which had led to the resignation of the defense minister of India and the president of the ruling party and the cashiering of several generals. And post that, we had been locked into this very, very internecine sort of battle with the state, where the state was actually hitting out at us with every extra constitutional method at its disposal, including filing false cases against us.
Was this BJP?
Well, this was actually the BJP government of the time, you know, the right-wing Hindu government. And so we were locked in this very public battle. So I just assumed that these guards were showing up as some kind of side play in this public battle. It was only when this murder attempt happened, and then we were told this story by the police that a contract had been taken out for a hit on me, and the contract had been given by the ISI of Pakistan in Kathmandu and Nepal to five Indian hitmen, and the rationale was that if something happened to me, then the government of the day would have to take the blame. So there was this bizarre...
So they were blaming the ISI, gets blamed for everything, even though it should be blamed for a lot of things.
Well, that's... Yeah. You know, what happened with all of this was that beyond a point, I very quickly discovered it wasn't an inquiry to be pursued because it led nowhere.
Did they ever bring these men up for trial?
In fact, that's when the seed of the book came to me. The five men who were arrested were then presented in court one day, 2 months later, and I was summoned to the court. It was a lower court in Patiala House, and I was in front of the magistrate. I was meant to try and either identify or not identify these boys. And so I went into court, and that scene is actually captured in the book. That's one of the other very seed scenes in the book, which is true to life. And I went into this courtroom, and a lower court in India is quite an experience. In fact, writing the scene was one of the most challenging things in the book, because it's part Kafka and part Chaplin. You know, it's a very surreal thing. So these five boys were lined up for me, and the magistrate asked me one by one if I knew any of them. Of course I didn't. So I said I didn't. But it's when I left the courtroom and I was riding back home that the idea for the book began to tick inside me.
Well, your narrator is put under 24-hour police protection after the plot is foiled, and some of the book's funny moments grow out of interactions that he and his family have with their various police minders. Did that happen with you?
Well, not exactly that way, but, you know...
Salman Rushdie had already gone into hiding at that point, hadn't he?
Yeah, he'd been in hiding for quite some time by then, but, you know, I didn't need to go into hiding. I was leading a very public life. It was just that I had these a detail of 24 armed men who were protecting me 24 hours a day. So my house was sandbagged, my office was sandbagged. Every time I traveled, there were carbine-wielding men in the car with me. There was an escort car with more carbine-wielding men. So there was this very bizarre setup. In the meantime, I was chugging along... having this public spat with the state, and the state was mandating more and more men to protect me on the other hand. So it was fairly surreal, but it was also an unbelievable opportunity to start processing very deep material about Indian democracy and Indian life.
I'm curious about why you chose not to name your narrator.
Well, you know, that seems to be some kind of a personal kink. All my three books have been written in the first person, and even my first book didn't have a named narrator. And I remember the social media being abuzz with trying to discover what the name of the narrator was, and he was never named. And so there isn't an obvious reason for not naming him, but I always get the feeling one of the seductive techniques that novelists use to seduce the reader often is to create this the whole illusion of familiarity. So you're almost meant to know. You're talking to the reader, and the reader's almost meant to know who you are.
But also, you're a journalist, and journalists rarely say in a news article, "I went," or whatever. They try to always take this objective, present some kind of objective view. Several critics have pointed out that your protagonist is a really difficult person for the reader to like. He's selfish. He can be almost cruelly critical of the people around him. He seems to think about almost nothing other than sex. What led you to create such an important character with so few redeeming qualities?
You know, in fact, the struggle, I mean, I only began to write the book in 2005. The narratorial voice was the triumph. For 4 years, I couldn't enter the material. The material was so complex, so polyphonous. My ambition for the book was so huge. I couldn't find the tone to enter the book. And it's only when I found the tone of that very dyspeptic, acidic, highly dislikable narrator, that is the voice that allowed me immediately to enter the material. And the moment I found that voice, I began to write, and in 2 years the book was done. The thing to understand there is that if you can't take an earnest, sincere voice to this kind of material, because what you would end up creating then is a mountain of banalities. You have to enter this material in a very angular way, and it completely opens up the material. And if you read the book, you know, then it suddenly becomes possible to comment on all the myriad, you know, issues and concerns that India is tied up in.
He can be very sarcastic and critical because he has that kind of mindset. Novelists have often told me that they need to almost fall in love with their characters to write about them at such great length. Did you fall in love with this character?
No, I didn't. I just loved his acerbic voice, you know. And as I was telling somebody the other day in a public function, I said, it's not my job to defend the narrator's dislikability. It's the narrator's job. It's his own job to defend himself. You know, as a writer, I try and inhabit the skin of every character. And, you know, the story of Mere Assassins has a vast array of characters of totally differing viewpoints and persuasions.
It's interesting that this book has led... your publisher, Melville, to consider publishing a previous novel, right? The Valley of the Mask?
No, that's the next one, actually.
Oh, that's the next one?
That's the next one.
And then your first novel, The Alchemy of Desire, did receive a lot of acclaim, won France's Prix Mille Pages for foreign... literary fiction.
Alchemy of Desire did very well across the world. It was published in 14 European languages. It was a bestseller in quite a few. It really got around.
But where do you find time to write these books? This novel is almost 600 pages, and you're still the full-time editor of Tehelka, which is a major news magazine in India. I think that's a pretty big
job. What can help a little is if you party less. I mean, it, so I mean, I think that that's one thing that kind of works in favor of getting the work done. But to be honest, 95% of my life is my journalism and Tehelka. I think what freed me up to pursue my literary ambitions is really the realization that there would never be a perfect place or a perfect time to do the writing. I had to do it on the run when I could find time. So I have a discipline about the writing, but it's not linked either to time or place. It's just linked to getting the work done.
My guest is Tarun J. Tejpal, who is a journalist, a publisher, a novelist, and the editor of India's leading news magazine. His novel, The Story of My Assassins, is published by Melville House. Aren't you also involved in the book publishing business? Weren't you the first to discover Arundhati Roy and publish her novel, The God of Small Things?
Well, that was one of the sort of one of the side shows of my professional life. Very briefly, I and a friend of mine ran a small imprint, which was called India Inc. And as it turned out, Arundhati Roy's book was the first one we did, and it was a runaway success. And we did a few more, but eventually I was reclaimed by journalism, and publishing just remained one of the blips in my career.
Now, it's evident from your descriptions of the lives of the five would-be assassins in your novel that you know a great deal about and have enormous empathy for India's poor. Well, you were raised in comfortable circumstances, weren't you?
Well, you know, that is entirely true. In fact, the burden of the book, without ever stating it, is really to try and tell the stories of the Indian underclass and the Indian oppressed as empathetically as possible, because I always live with the feeling that most of us who come from the elite class of India have in some sense shut our eyes to the sufferings of the underclass. So this, both as a journalist and as a novelist, it's really a concern of mine that the stories of the underclass get an amplification, because without that, you can't create a sensitization to their plight among the elite and the upper classes.
Do you feel that the image of the underclass in India that we tend to get in the West in a film like Slumdog Millionaire really sanitizes the situation?
I think it does. I think it's a little disappointing. I think it's okay as engagement and entertainment, but I don't think one should take it too seriously. I mean, the concerns of the Indian underclass are very, very serious. And one of the things I wanted to do by writing this book was to actually restore dignity to these people without taking away the truth and of their lives. So as you know, the five assassins in the book, you know, they all have ended up becoming metaphors for different fault lines of India, the fault lines of caste, religion, class, feudalism. I mean, they all end up representing these deep fault lines that run through India.
What about Sarah? Is she a metaphor for something in India? Because in addition to the assassins, you have a number of interesting, unconventional characters. Sarah is the narrator's mistress. She has an extremely strong social conscience, and she becomes convinced soon after the would-be assassins are arrested that they've been unjustly imprisoned, despite the fact that she is the girlfriend of the target of these guys.
Well, you know, I mean, in fact, in many ways, the book turns on Sarah. I mean, she's the strongest character in the book, the narrator's mistress. But I think she's a fairly universal character around the world. She's a good do-gooder, but so blinded with her own idea of doing the right thing that she can often get things incredibly wrong. And, you know, it's a literary conceit many novelists have explored. You know, out of a great need to do good, you can end up doing great wrong. So she's, I think, a fairly universal, as are, I think, in many ways, all the assassins. They're all representative of underclasses anywhere in the world who struggle with the same instruments to survive, the instruments of humor, the instruments of pop philosophy, you know, whatever desperation pushes them to, I mean, they grab at it and try and make a life out of the, for themselves out of it. And really, the conceit for the book came because when I saw those five so-called killers in the courtroom in real life, I kept thinking, what is it that brings a man to a place where he's willing to take a few rupees or a few dollars, if you choose, to kill a man that they've never met, seen, or heard of? I mean, what brings you to that point? And that's why in the book, I actually tell the backstories of all the five assassins. I take them back to their own childhoods when they are innocent, because for me, that redeems each of the five assassins. Because once you take them back to their childhood, then they stand redeemed. You have found them in their state of innocence. And then the world happens to them. So in some sense, my attempt was also to say that much before they begin to wrong the world, they have been wronged by the world.
It is my sense that on top of all of that, you your desire was to tell us a lot about India, the India that we normally don't hear about in the West. Did you think of your ideal reader as somebody in the West, or is this a book that Indians will also get something out of?
I actually see this as a book that should be read by not just Western readers. But
you want everybody to read it, of course, because you want to sell as many books as you can.
No, apart from that, I think even more than selling as many books as I can, I really want people to be able to see India in its true complexity, in all its magnificence and its despair. Not for it to be a kind of a promotional cutout, one way or the other, either as a doomed third world country or as a booming superpower, both of which are false summations of the truth of India, which is infinitely more complex and far more challenging and exciting.
So that whole thing about the boom times in India is not true. No, that's another discussion some other time. Thank you so much for being with us, Tarun J. Tejpal. His latest novel, The Story of My Assassins, published by Melville House. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Lena.